Welcome, everyone. Today is October 20th, 2011, and welcome to the inaugural session for the Ontologies and Standards series within the Ontolog Forum. I'm Michael Gruninger, and together with John Bateman, we will be the facilitators for today's meeting. My slides should be up by now, and if you move to slide two, this series of sessions within the Ontolog Forum on ontologies and standards arose out of two places, one being the Ontology Summit in 2010, which had as its theme towards ontology-based standards, and more recently it's arising out of the Standardization Coordination Committee within the International Association of Ontology and its applications, which John and I are on the Executive Council. The role of this committee is to foster interactions between the ontology community on the one hand and the standards community on the other to kind of open up dialogues as to what are the challenges within the standards community, what are the challenges and potential solutions within the ontology community, and to facilitate the application of both specific ontologies as well as ontological analysis to existing standards and emerging standards. If we go to slide three, I just outline here a little bit of the scope of this particular technical committee within the Ontology Association. So over the coming months, we will be listening to several different projects presenting the work that's going on and from the standards community and then kind of bridging over to the ontology community. So some of the talks that we will be hearing will be about standards that actually contain ontologies. So one of these being the process specification language, which was standardized within ISO, the work of the standard ISO 15926, but also some of the work that's being standardized within the World Wide Web Consortium. And so there will be the OWL-S ontology, the OWL ontology for web services. There are also a variety of standards that are related not just to specific ontologies, but somehow support the entire ontology lifecycle. So among these will be languages such as OWL, the web ontology language, and Common Logic, which has been standardized within ISO. There are also several standards that are related to ontology registries and repositories. I give the ISO project numbers there, and we'll be hearing about more of those in the next session in 2 weeks from Elisa Kendall. And finally, again, one of the topics for today are standards that are related to kind of ontology mappings and the relationships between them. And we'll be hearing, like I said, from the Onto-IOP project in today's session. And then finally, there are several projects within the standards community that are looking to use ontologies to harmonize existing standards. And one particular project within ISO in the Technical Committee 184, SC4, is the project called IDIOM, which is attempting to use ontologies and ontological analysis to kind of harmonize all the different standards related to product modeling within manufacturing. That's the IDIOM project, and hopefully we'll be hearing from them over the coming months. If we move to the final slide, slide four, we have the agenda for today. The highlight of today will be a presentation of Onto-IOP, project by Christoph Lange and Till Masakowski and Oliver Kutz. Now, this project is being standardized within Technical Committee 37, and so to help us give give us some context to the project, Sue Ellen Wright, who is the chair of TC 37, Terminology and Other Language and Content Resources, will be giving an overview of some other ontology-related projects within that particular TC. So, John, do you have any comments?
No, I think you summarized it very well. Just to get the ball going there, and to emphasize that our overall agenda within this organizing synchronizing or harmonizing or whatever committee within the Association of Ontology is really to bring together different ontology-related approaches to standards. And so the examples which we have here are prime examples of ongoing work now. And, of course, we are very open and want to hear more from those who are working in the area of bringing ontologies and standards together. So that's the more general message as well, just to reemphasize what Michael said already. Exactly, as you can see on the second overhead there.
Okay, great. Let's see. So then I think what we'll do is we'll begin the first of the two talks, beginning with Sue Ellen Wright. Sue Ellen is a professor of German and a member of the Kent State University Institute for Applied Linguistics, where she teaches computer applications for translators and technical translation. In fact, she's the chair of the American Translators Association Terminology Committee. And this work has led her into active participation within the international standards community, where she chairs the U.S. Technical Advisory Group and leads up the Technical Committee 37, Terminology, Language, and Content Resources. And so she will today be giving an overview of some of the ontology-related work within that particular Technical Committee. Sue Ellen, welcome to the Ontolog Forum, and let's hear all about the work in TC 37.
Good morning. This is Sue Ellen Wright. I'm sorry I can't be with you this morning, but I'm here to, at least electronically, explain a little bit about ISO Technical Committee 37 and specifically Subcommittee 3, where we have housed the ONTO-IOP project. Our title is Terminology and Other Language and Content Resources, which appears on my first slide. Moving down to the second slide, we can see the scope for TC 37. Our scope deals with the standardization of principles, methods, and applications related to terminology and other language and content resources in the context of multilingual communication and cultural diversity. This scope covers a huge range, including the kinds of tools and formats that we use to mark up both syntactic, semantic, and terminological content in a wide range of language resources. Moving on to slide 3, to explain this in perhaps layman's terms, in plain terms, it says on the slide, we develop terminology standards for standardizers, in other words, people writing standards, who are defining their terms, authors writing text and language mediators, translation and interpreting professionals, who are translating and interpreting text and spoken discourse. We own the language codes. We develop a wide range of formats and approaches, annotation frameworks for natural language processing. Moving on to the next slide, we also work in close collaboration with a wide variety of other standards organizations and technical committees. The slide lists them. I'm not going to go into them. This is not an exhaustive list, but it's currently one of the most important lists that we have. I want to cite a few entities within TC37 that are of particular interest to the ontology community. I'm looking at slide 5 now. Recently I saw a comment where someone said, oh, I don't know what's going on with this project. We already have a working group called the Task Force on Ontology. There's no reason to assume that the WG8 working group is in any way in conflict with the work of the ONTO-IOP project. In fact, the group that met at our most recent meeting this summer specifically expressed the interest in the ONTO-IOP project and stated that this was a worthy project for TC37 and that it in no way infringed upon the original intention of a WGA. WGA is more of a working group for the discussion of potential conflicts among different subcommittees within TC37, because we have so many different projects going on that touch on knowledge representation. As a consequence, we felt we needed a venue where everyone could speak together and compare what we're doing so that we don't ever go off at cross purposes. Moving on to slide 6, another activity that we have that is related at the TC level, in other words, these are our working groups that exist at the TC level. This is working group 9, which I could add to slide 6, the data category registry. The data category registry is a metadata registry for data elements that are used in language resources. In conjunction, outside of, but in direct relationship to the data category registry, we are developing a resource called the relation registry. Actually, it's not a single resource. It's a methodology for creating multiple relation registries to express relations between and among data categories that are defined in the data category registry and which are directly accessible on the web at all times via our persistent identifiers. This is an activity where I see a great deal of interest for what's going on in Onto IOP. Slide 7 shows us just two of the activities that are going on in our SC1, Principles and Methods. Our core standard in TC37 is ISO 704, Terminology, Work, Principles, and Methods. This particular standard outlines procedures for drawing, and I'm specifically saying drawing, terminological concept systems. The notion of developing concept systems demonstrating conceptual relations is very old in TC37, and it goes back to a time when we actually drew these concept systems on paper and then later drew them in computer environments. We've moved on with our technical report 25156, which is being developed into further standards. I'm not giving you a huge amount of detail here on this slide, to using UML for representing these concept systems, which I, for one, consider a real step forward. We're still not into the ontology representation world here, but it's very closely related. And it's the kind of thing where we could draw on information for cross-reasoning between platforms. In slide 8, we have SC3, Systems to Manage Terminology, Knowledge, and Content. This is where our governing standard for the data category registry lives. We have here the Onto IOP project, and we have a couple other standards that are potentially of interest, 22274 concept-related aspects for developing internationalizing classification systems, and we have 26162, the design and implementation and maintenance of terminology management systems, which also touches on the notion of developing terminological concept systems. Slide 9 lists the scope for SC3. Slide 10 shows just the tip of the iceberg of SC4 language resource management. I've included a couple slides here that may or may not touch on the ontology work. SC4 is primarily interested in the development of annotation frameworks. If we move down to slide 11, you see a mind map that was created a couple years ago, but we've tried to update it for this particular presentation. It shows what I call knowledge representation resources. It goes back to very primitive knowledge representation resources like ordered lists. And it ranges across the TC37 world with terminology management systems, the library science world with controlled vocabularies of many different kinds, working our way through shallow ontologies like WordNet, and the kinds of resources that can be developed for automatic generation of ontologies using annotated text in the NLP world, to the more specifically ontology-driven environments that we see with the development of semantic networks and the evolution of the OWL-SCoS standards in W3C. Moving on down to slide 12, I've pulled out just those items from slide 11 that are specifically related to what I call systematic approaches. If you notice in slide 11, some of the items are represented in red and some of the items are represented in blue, and then there are some crazy colors in between. That was a visual effort to show the degree of systematicity, with the notion that systematicity has to do with the representation of conceptual relations within the resource. So in some cases, the relations that might exist within a resource may well be latent as opposed to overtly expressed, externalized, using the kinds of tools that we have with OWL and SCoS for specifically expressing relations in a way that they can be reasoned upon using tools and agents. Slide 13, I'm not going to go into great detail, but it's designed to show the different kinds of standards that are out there, from metadata standards to identification standards. And I might note in the area of identification standards that our persistent identifiers need to be added to that list as well, because it's through the persistent identifiers that we visualize, at least in the metadata area, that we will be able to reference back and forth between heterogeneous resources. We have a variety here of markup standards, data interchange standards. It includes the cultural vocabularies we see in the library science world, our terminology standards, lexicography standards, various knowledge ordering schemes, which includes the ontologies that we've been talking about, but also tools such as taxonomy tools, UML topic maps. At the bottom of the slide, we see both the standards that are being developed in the translation world, where we're developing a huge annotated body of text in bilingual and multilingual form, corpus management tools, and archiving standards. Moving on down to slide 14, I have tried to add in, and I realize there's a lot of acronyms here, but they're easy to find on the web. I've added in a variety of groups who are involved in developing these standards. So it's two different views of more or less the same information, but looking at the, here you see ISO TC 37, you see ISO TC 46, JTC 1, which deals with a lot of the metadata stuff, and of course IANA, the Unicode Consortium, and a variety of other entities that are involved in the standards arena. Also in closely related areas, such as TC 46 and some of the other standards and quasi-standards bodies. Okay, that was my final statement.
Thank you, Sue Ellen, for that fascinating look into what's happening in TC 37, a lot of exciting ontology work there. So I think what we'll do is move then on to the presentation of OntoIOP. I think Christoph will be leading the presentation. So, Christoph, you can begin.
This is Christoph. So I'm presenting this specific activity within TC 37 SC3 that deals with ontology integration and interoperability, in short, OntoIOP. And this is to become a family of standards. And for now, we're dealing with the first of these standards, which specifies a distributed ontology language, or abbreviated as DOL. And Phil Masakovsky, Oliver Kutz, and myself are members of this project team that is the core group of people who are editing the standards. And Michael Gruninger has also joined now. He's sitting in the same room here and listening. So I will move on to slide 2. That is introducing you to the motivation, how we have come up with this idea of developing a language for making ontologies interoperable. This work is currently funded by the EU-funded project OASIS that deals with assistive and accessible technology. And in that project, it has been a goal from the beginning to develop ways of making different ontologies interoperable and eventually to get an ISO standardization process started. And from the perspective of that project, this need arose in a bottom-up way. Because if you look at assistive technology, assistive technology increasingly relies on communication. That is, communication among people, communication of people with smart devices they're using. For example, there is an intelligent wheelchair that is being developed at this place here. And then also communication among these devices. For example, in a smart apartment that the wheelchair can communicate with the doors. Now the problem is that all of these systems in a smart environment are driven by different software. So it is quite costly to make all software components that are involved accessible and inclusive. Or in practice, it is sometimes even impossible. If we assume that in the near future these software services will more and more be based on ontologies, we hope to be able to make them more interoperable that way by making ontologies more interoperable. Ultimately, we aim at making devices more interoperable and making services more interoperable, which access these devices, and also making content more interoperable, which is delivered by such services. And that has to be done at different levels. First, at the level of data and metadata, that is data about these primary data. Then one level higher, more abstractly, at the level of data models and also methods for modeling these data. And finally, on an even more abstract level, on the level of meta models. And that's what we are doing here. We are developing a meta-ontology language that makes ontology languages interoperable. On slide 3, you see this big picture as a diagram that summarizes the whole motivation for what we are doing, why we are developing an ontology interoperability language in the context of smart environments of accessible and assistive technology. Here you see three columns. The leftmost one is about knowledge and making knowledge interoperable in knowledge infrastructures. Then we have in the second column, in the central one, we have services that operate with this knowledge. So these are software agents that operate in the context of a service-oriented architecture. They process knowledge and refer to knowledge representations. And in the third column on the right side, you see hardware devices that interact in a smart environment. So that was the big overview from left to right. In each of these columns, we have different instances interacting with each other, like different knowledge bases, different software agents, different hardware devices, and they all need to be made interoperable. And, this is pretty ambitious. So for now, we are targeting the leftmost column of this big picture. And specifically targeting the meta model layer of that. That is, we aim at making ontology languages and their underlying logics interoperable. On slide 4, I'm giving an overview of this language that we are on whose standardization we're working, that is DOL, the Distributed Ontology Language. So in the application scenarios of the OASIS project, it has turned out that it's not sufficient to deal with simply one ontology language that is based on one logic, because you will always have different services and different devices with quite different implementations and implementations relying on different ontology languages. So you need to support multiple ontology languages and multiple logics in order to achieve true semantic integration and interoperability. And that is what part one of this Onto IOP standard cares about. We are developing a meta language for several things. The first main feature is that we want to support logically heterogeneous ontologies. that is, for example, ontologies in which you can combine description logic axioms with full first-order logic axioms. The second thing that we want to support is modular ontologies. That means, that there is not just one monolithic ontology that covers the whole intelligence, for example, about a smart environment in which people live and get assistance, and a wheelchair and intelligent doors and an intelligent refrigerator that is connected to the internet and so on. But we assume that all of these devices have separate ontologies, but that these ontologies reuse parts of each other via modularity. Okay, that means at the same time that we're interested in linking different ontologies, interlinking them with each other, and that comprises formal as well as informal links. Formal links as in as in importing theories into other theories, but also informal links as in saying in a statistical way that, this, with a 99% confidence, this concept in ontology A is probably the same as that concept in ontology B. And finally, if you consider the collaborative development of ontologies and the life cycle and maintenance of ontologies, it's also important to deal with annotation and documentation of ontologies, so that that one developer who, say, adds some concepts and axioms to an ontology, documents them so that other developers understand them. But ontology documentation can also target the end users of services and devices, because interactive help can also be provided that way. Okay, so this language, this distributed ontology language, will have a formal semantics, and we're going to provide concrete serializations, at least XML, RDF, and text. There are more details about that will follow. So that is about this meta-ontology language that aims at making ontology languages and thus ontologies interoperable. And for now, we leave services and devices to future parts of this Onto IOP standard. Okay, now from slide 5, I will go into more detail about DOL, the Distributed Ontology Language. So far, the language does not yet exist in such a way that there is a complete specification of how you write down an ontology in this language, but what we've mainly been doing so far is that we have established requirements that this language needs to satisfy, and I will now enumerate and explain all of these requirements. There are 8 in whole. The first 2 ones you see on this slide. First one is that DOL should be generally applicable, open, and extensible. Generally applicable means that it should not be restricted to one domain in which ontologies are used. That means, in particular, it's motivated by scenarios from assistive technologies, but it is not restricted to that. It could also be used in any other domain where ontologies and different ontology-based services need to be made interoperable. And it is also not restricted to foundational ontologies or to concrete ontologies. It can be used for any kind of ontologies. The second aspect, open, means that it does not depend on a particular ontology language or logic, but it should be, that's the third criterion, it should be extensible. And for what this openness and extensibility means, I will explain that later more specifically. We are defining conformance criteria for that, how this DOL framework can be extended. Okay, the second requirement is that DOL shall be a logic-agnostic meta-language. That means DOL will provide certain structural elements that all ontology languages have in common. So there will be a way of saying this is an ontology, say this document or this file contains an ontology. There will be a way of saying this is a module of an ontology, and there will be a way of saying this is an axiom in some logic. But then the formal expression that constitutes the axiom, that will not be part of DOL, but concretely writing down an axiom as a formal expression, that requires committing to a specific logic, and languages that depend on specific logics, we have a lot of these languages. These could be any existing ontology language or any future ontology language. So for that, DOL will borrow from concrete ontology languages and only provide the meta framework around that connects everything and that puts the glue between different ontologies and ontology languages. And DOL will also provide constructs for establishing links between different ontologies, but there is a separate requirement for that. So let me go to slide number 6, second page of requirements. The first requirement is that DOL should have user as well as machine-readable serializations. That means, file formats or document formats. For users, there will be a text serialization. That is, for example, if you're familiar with common logic, there is CLIF, that is an easily readable and writable Lisp-like serialization. For OWL, there is the Manchester syntax. That's targeted at humans reading and writing ontologies. For machines, it's a bit more convenient to process, more explicit and more elaborately structured formats, most commonly XML and RDF. So we will also provide XML and RDF serializations of DOL. Wherever DOL borrows concepts from syntactic constructs from existing ontology languages, that means especially inside axioms, we aim at literally including these features of these ontology languages as far as it is possible. That means in practice, whenever name clashes can be avoided, because we aim at providing an easy ability to reuse existing ontologies. So if you have an OWL ontology and a common logic ontology that adds some axioms in the same domain, you should easily be able to merge axioms from both ontologies into one DOL document and without rewriting everything. So we're not aiming at delivering a universal logic that comes with its very own syntax into which everything has to be translated before it can be used in combination. We want to facilitate reuse. The fourth requirement is that a DOL ontology should not just be a bunch of axioms from written in different ontology language, but that we also want to have a well-defined understanding of what the semantics of such a heterogeneous ontology is. So DOL should have a formal logic-based semantics. That means that if we want to use existing ontology languages, that are based on certain logics. If we want to use them within the DOLL framework, we need to come up with criteria for when a certain logic that is underlying an ontology language, when that conforms with DOLL. I will give more details about that. And we also have to provide translations between these logics. That is detailed on the next slide, on slide number 7. There is the ontological translation graph that has been developed in our group. And that shows a number of ontology languages and logics and how they are related to each other in a formal theoretical way. Roughly on top you see ontology languages and logics with little expressivity, and towards the bottom it goes to higher and higher levels of expressivity, which at the same time means less fortunate computational properties, up to, well, semi-decidability and undecidability of reasoning tasks. So, well, you know it from practical engineering, it's always a trade-off. If you develop an ontology-based system, whether you would like to capture the whole knowledge model of your domain or whether you would like to be able to reason efficiently. But, what we believe is that heterogeneous ontologies resolve this problem by allowing you to combine ontologies with efficient computational properties with ontologies and ontology languages in which you can express a lot. But if you want to use them in combination, you have to be aware of how ontologies in these different languages can be translated to each other. That is, for example, how you can translate from an ontology given in some description logic, so an OWL ontology, for example, how you can translate that to first-order logic. That is relevant if you want to combine OWL ontologies with common logic ontologies. Well, common logic is actually a bit beyond first-order logic. I will not go into the formal details of this, but I will just note that if you want to translate ontology languages and logics into each other, you have to be aware of all that, like how two different logics theories, how they can exactly be translated to each other, because that would be an important part of our conformance criteria, that any logic and any ontology language needs to obey in order to be integrated into the DOLL framework. So that would be important when you wonder how what semantics a DOLL ontology has. Now let me go on with the requirements on slide 8. The next requirement is, in fact, something that I've said already, but we make it explicit once more, that DOLL should allow for expressing heterogeneous ontologies. That could be, for example, an OWL ontology that is enhanced with some first-order logic axioms. For example, that you are able to use an OWL reasoner, which is efficient, plus a first-order logic theorem prover, so that you can determine all consequences of an ontology, plus a first-order logic model finder, so that you can combine a variety of different tools that are tailored to specific ontology languages and specific logics. The next requirement is that DOLL should allow for expressing links between ontologies, and we're using the term link in a very general way that includes formal or structural links that have a logical semantics. For example, theory imports, theory interpretations, conservative extensions, and such things. But our notion of links also comprises informal things, like, for example, ontology alignments between two ontologies that have statistical confidence values and that may have been computed using heuristics. Here below you see, in this graph, you see an example for structural links between two ontologies. So suppose that this is a scenario that comes from the OASIS project. Suppose you have some OWL ontologies that are, that deal with concrete domains. And suppose you have a foundational ontology, in this case the Dolce ontology, which is formalized in the first order ontology language. In this case, we assume that it is formalized in common logic. And we also suppose that these two ontologies have been written down in certain concrete serializations of their ontology languages. What we would like to do in one DOL ontology is to say, well, this DOL ontology imports some concrete OWL ontologies which have been serialized in OWL XML. At the same time, it imports a foundational ontology in common logic, which also has its own concrete serialization. And then in this DOL ontology, we are reusing concepts from two ontologies in different logics, and we're mapping them to each other by saying, well, this concept in the tourism OWL ontology is related in a certain way to that concept in the first order logic foundational ontology. And well, in an informal way, you can just establish any kind of link between these concepts. But if you want to do it in a formally clear way, you have to do a translation. In this case, common logic is more expressive than OWL, and it is a proper superset of OWL. So you can translate any OWL ontology into a common logic ontology. So if we want to say, well, this concept in OWL is the same in a formal way as that concept in this common logic ontology that we are using, we have to translate one ontology, the one on the left side, from OWL to common logic. And then when we have both ontologies in common logic, we can map. But the key feature of DOL is that this translation has not it will not have to be done manually. That is, by taking the OWL ontology and then literally writing down the equivalent of each OWL axiom in common logic and then making some formal mappings on the common logic side. But in DOL, you will be able to just write down that this concept in OWL is the same as that concept in common logic. Just when there is an application that relies on the formal semantics of that, then this application will perform a lookup in our logic graph that was shown on the previous slide, on slide number 7, and then it will see by what path in this graph OWL can be translated to common logic. And we suppose that any DOL-compliant application will do that under the hood as needed. But we don't want the authors of ontologies to bother with that. So that was a long requirement with a long example. Now I'll go to slide number 9, to the last set of requirements. I said in the previous example that it should be possible that authors do not explicitly translate ontologies, but that nevertheless tools should be able to understand the whole meaning of a heterogeneous and modular ontology. Well, sometimes it's convenient not to explicitly write down everything that you need when dealing with a complex ontology, but in other engineering scenarios throughout the ontology lifecycle, it is necessary to write down everything. That is to write down, for example, we take this axiom from an OWL ontology and we apply exactly this translation to it in order to come up with that common logic axiom. Or it may be necessary not just to say this concept in ontology A is probably equivalent to that concept in ontology B with a confidence of 99%, but it may be necessary to provide an explicit documentation of the alignment, the matching algorithm that has obtained this ontology alignment. And DOL aims at making both ways possible. That is, writing down ontologies and links between them implicitly, if you don't need all the detail, but also to write down all explicit information. Writing down a lot of explicit information that is related to the final requirement is that DOL should allow for rich annotation and documentation of ontologies. Concretely, we aim at an annotation mechanism that is compatible to RDF and RDFA, which is RDF embedded into XML documents. We aim at, if the authors want, we would like to make possible a very fine-grained intermixture of formalization and the documentation of that formalization that is sometimes referred to as literate programming. That is a term that is known in, well, software development and programming languages. The same should also be possible for ontologies. And DOL itself will not provide the vocabularies for providing such annotations of ontologies, but we're going to do a survey of existing vocabularies, and there is in fact a number of such vocabularies, and they are also being examined in different activities within ISO TT37. There is, for example, OMV, the ontology metadata vocabulary, that allows you to say this ontology module has been implemented in that ontology language by that author, and it is the third version, which adds two concepts over version number two, for example. So these were the eight requirements for DOL. And the next thing that we have so far thought about is, well, the criteria for ontology languages and logics to conform with DOL. Recall that DOL provides a meta-language framework. DOL is not a complete ontology language in itself, but for axioms and for anything that depends on a concrete logic, it will borrow these constructs from existing ontology languages and therefore also rely on the logics that these concrete ontology languages are based on. So we need to be able to say, well, if we want to use, say, OWL within the DOL framework, we need to say in what way that's possible. That is, we need to establish the conformance of OWL with DOL. We shall do that is establishing the conformance with DOL, for a number of relevant ontology languages. And we shall do that for OWL, Common Logic, and RDFS. These will be normative parts of the DOL standard, because OWL, Common Logic, and RDFS are proper standards. Then there are also some ontology languages that are used and that have been specified, but not by standardization organizations. There is the first order language F logic. There are UML class diagrams, where you might rather know them from software development, but in fact they can also be used, and they are being used for modeling class concept hierarchies in ontologies, and they have been given a semantics by mapping them to OWL. That is not a standard, but it is still being used, so we are interested in that. The same holds for OBO, which is a common ontology language in the biology domain. The semantics of OBO has also been specified by mapping it to OWL. Okay, so if there is any logic that we want to conform to make conforming with DOL, we can do that directly. In the best case, we can establish something that we call semantic conformance. That is, by looking at the logic underlying an ontology language and expressing this logic within a formal framework called institutions. I will not go into detail about this now, but you will see more and more of an emerging draft of this in the working draft of the standard, which is available in the repository that is linked from the Onto IOP page in the Ontolog wiki. On one of the next slides, there will be a link to that. Well, institutions are a powerful model, but they cannot capture the all logics that are underlying certain ontology languages. If you have non-monotonic logics, for example, in rule-based mechanisms, well, you cannot use institutions, but then you have to use something weaker that's called entailment systems. But we're also aiming at specifying the conformance of entailment systems with DOL. So much for the semantics, but then we also have to care about the conformance of syntax, that is, of the serialization of an ontology language. And here we also imagine different levels of conformance. The highest level is XML conformance, because in an XML document you can mix content from different languages, that is, from different namespaces, and you can annotate them in a very fine-grained way, and you can intermix different levels of text and annotations as markup up to the granularity of literate programming. The next level, which is a slightly lower level of conformance, is RDF conformance. In RDF, you can also mix several different namespaces, but you don't quite have the possibility of doing markup and literate programming, but still you have powerful annotation mechanisms. Then, if there is an ontology language that does not have an XML or an RDF serialization, but a text serialization, then, well, such text serializations usually have some syntax for attaching comments to, well, maybe if you're lucky, attaching comments to an ontology, a declaration of a symbol in an ontology, to an axiom in an ontology, but even in the worst case, you can attach comments to a line of text. As soon as we can do that, we can introduce a special syntax that we will embed into these comments in order to attach annotations to them. And if even that does not work, we can still provide standoff markup. That is, if we want to, within a DOL framework, to reuse an ontology that comes in its very own strange language that does not even allow for text comments, then we can still use standards like, for example, XPointer for pointing into the text range from line 37, column 20, to line 59, column 42, and say, this is an axiom in some logic, and it has been formalized by this ontology engineer. In the chat, I got a comment from Peter. I will do that on one of the following slides. For now, let me continue with slide 11, the second set of conformance criteria. We've so far had the conformance of logic and the conformance of a serialization, and the next aspect is the conformance of a document. If you have a document or a file, and wonder whether this document is a DOL ontology. Well, in the best case, all information has been made explicit. Like, well, this section of the document is an axiom in this logic, and in this ontology language, that axiom is in that logic, in that ontology language. But if it is a more colloquial document that is written down in a human-friendly language, then we can also imagine that you simply intermix OWL axioms in a text serialization, say in OWL Manchester syntax, with common logic axioms in CLIS, the text-oriented serialization of common logic. Now the question is how can you tell that one axiom is OWL and the other one is common logic? That is only possible if there are no name clashes. But if there are no name clashes, then an application can automatically identify what what ontology languages have been combined in this document. That means we can assume that it is the same case as if all this information had been made explicit in this document. And finally, we will say something about the conformance of an application with DOL. So far, we have not really elaborated that, but our initial guess at that is that an application conforms with DOL if it produces DOL-conforming documents. That is, for example, the Protégé ontology editor will conform with DOL as soon as we have established the conformance of OWL, that is the language that is supported by Protégé, with DOL. And if it is necessary, say if we cannot literally incorporate OWL into the DOL framework, but if we say if it is necessary to explicitly say, well, this is an OWL ontology and it is based on this description logic, then that means for the conformance of OWL applications that they additionally have to provide this information in ontologies so that they conform with DOL. Let me go on to slide number 11. There's a very short overview of the organizational structure of this project. So as you have seen in Sue Allen's presentation previously, the Onto IOP initiative is taking place within TC37. It is working draft number 17347. And the draft is mainly being developed by a project team that consists of Till, Oliver, and me. And it is it is being administered by Gottfried Herzog from DIN, the German National Standardization Organization. And we have a number of experts from a lot of different countries. So there is, for example, Michael Gruninger, who is moderating the session, is the expert from Canada. At the moment he is the only expert, but there are also countries that have nominated multiple experts. Here is a list of these countries, and the experts from some of these countries have already been actively participating in shaping DOL and developing the standard. From other countries, experts have been nominated, but they will only become active in the near future. Okay, slide number 13 is about the infrastructure, the communication infrastructure of the project. That is an unofficial community infrastructure for now, but in a later phase, and I will outline the roadmap of this ISO standardization on the next slide. The further we go to the final ISO standard, the more formal the procedure gets. That means at the moment we appreciate any input from the community, and we eagerly approach the communities around individual ontology languages. So we are already talking to people from the Common Logic community. We're starting to talk to people from the OWL community and so on. And, I mean, for this meta framework that is to include all of these ontology languages, we need feedback from the people, from the individual communities. But then if we move further on in the ISO standardization process, the procedures will become more formal. And, for example, the final standards will be approved by the experts that have been nominated by the national standardization committees, standardization organizations. For now, we have a mailing list that is administered by Peter Yim. So most of the people in this call are already subscribed to this mailing list. Those who are not can get subscribed. And there is an archive of previous discussions. Discussions have started 1 or 2 weeks ago. Then there is a file repository where we put the working draft, not the sources of the working draft. These are in a separate subversion repository, but every few days we will put the latest state of the working draft into this community repository. There are minutes from meetings, and there is other relevant literature. And since today, there is also a collection of examples. Michael has started to work out some examples of ontologies. And, well, last but not least, there is a homepage of OntoIOP in the Ontolog Wiki. I see that there is a number of questions collecting, but I will now first go to the last slide, that is slide number 14, and then after that we can talk about these questions. This slide is just giving a short overview of the formal process of standardizing DOL within ISO. At the moment, 3 weeks ago, we had a meeting about a working draft, and in this meeting we gathered a lot of feedback, which we are now incorporating into the second working draft. And by the end of November, we will circulate the second working draft in the community, and anyone who is interested, that is hopefully all of you, will have 6 weeks for reviewing this and discussing it, preferably on the mailing list. And then there will also be a face-to-face meeting on February 23rd at DIN in Berlin. You don't have to come there, but you can also join in via teleconference. The details will be announced by Gottfried Herzog in time. Then, in this meeting, we hope to gather a lot more feedback, and we will respond to this feedback in the third working draft, which is to be released in April next year. After that, there will be another period of review and discussions, and then the next face-to-face meeting takes place as a part of the week of ISO TC37 meetings in Madrid at the end of June. Then we're getting more formal and releasing, hopefully in August next year, a committee draft. That is something where the nominated experts have 3 months for reviewing, and then they vote. That is, they can accept or reject this committee draft. And then, well, if this is accepted, then the next steps are a draft international standard, final draft international standard, and then hopefully in 2015, an international standard. That was the last slide, and that ends my introduction of DOL within the OntoIOP activity.
Okay, so John, if you wouldn't mind taking over the kind of mechanics of the discussion, since we're only sharing one phone over here. But I think just next up, if Till, did you want to add any particular comments to Christoph's presentation, or should we just open the floor up to questions?
Here's still no comments from my side.
Okay, then to make most use of the time and get some feedback, then I think we should go over to some questions and a question-answer session. Does anybody want to raise the hand? Or I don't see on the chat any hands raised at present, apart from Peter. Peter, you want to go ahead?
Okay. Right. I guess I need a little bit of clarification. When I first put the mailing list and the shared file workspace together, I was under the impression that access is limited to people who will be in the working group, which was slightly different from how you presented it. I like what you're saying, but that wasn't my understanding in the beginning. I guess we probably need to clarify with either Sue Ellen or Gottfried. We originally subscribed a whole bunch of people, some of which weren't part of the ISO working group or country experts. However, Sue Ellen was under the understanding that those people weren't there because of bureaucratic reasons. And it's just a matter of time that they become part of the working group. So this is my understanding. However, I guess we could still, since like the Onto IOP page on the Ontolog Wiki is totally open, and I'm almost certain we could occasionally publish interim snapshots of the working draft so that they could be available and we could discuss, say, on Ontolog Forum if the wider community wants to discuss maybe some comments from Christoph or Till or Oliver or John. Unfortunately, Sue Ellen or Gottfried is not on this call. Otherwise, we could have found out right away.
So this is Christoph. If I understood Gottfried correctly, he encouraged us to eagerly collect feedback from as many people as possible in the current working phase. I explained that, well, within this ISO standardization process, there will be a more formal phase in which, say, only the votes of the nominated experts will be considered. But now we still have a lot of power to shape the standards, and I think we are interested in, well, gathering as much feedback as possible. And that means we should be open to include further people. Till, would you agree with that?
Yes, surely.
It seems that making sure that we get as wide a range of feedback as possible in our early stage would be beneficial. So a question, I guess, you'll have to work out how to technically make that happen.
All right. So we can put it down as an action item to get that process in place then.
Christoph has got his hand up. Christoph, did you want to add something additional?
I just have to put my hand down. It was about my previous statement.
Right. So Fabian Neuhaus is up there for another comment. Fabian?
My question is for Christoph. Are you sure that the nominated experts will vote? I'm pretty sure the countries will vote, so which probably means well.
Yes, that's right.
And so the fact that there are six people from Germany and three from the U.S. doesn't matter. It's one vote per country. Pretty sure about that. So.
Yes, that was not quite exact in my presentation. I think that you are right, and that means in practice, I'm still getting familiar with these processes, and I have no idea, for example, now that you are six or so experts in the U.S., whether there is any procedure, how you will agree, but in any country there is a head representative, like Sue Ellen in your case, and I'm sure that she will somehow organize this.
Normally in a normal ISO process, we would basically meet. The U.S. expert would meet separately and come up with the U.S. position, and then that would be negotiated with, you know, the German position and the Greek position. But since we are all used to work collaboratively internationally, I think we don't need that. Theoretically we would independently come up to our position and then negotiate it, right?
Mm-hmm. Did you mean by negotiation? Did you also mean negotiating across countries?
No, but I was just talking about how it's theoretically we would independently for each country would come to our conclusion and then vote.
I see.
But I don't think that is realistic for the way we work, since there's already well established international cooperation among various groups in this community. So why? You know, by make artificial national boundaries. So I don't think that's an issue. The other thing I wanted to bring up is I know getting feedback back early on is a good thing. I just think too early is not good. So I think it's very good if you have a solid draft to go out to the community and present it and get feedback then. But especially, I mean, we had one working meeting. We should give it a little time before we ask people to comment, because right now it's not solid enough, at least that's my feeling, to go out and ask people for comments. Better have them get their comments when we are feeling that it's already half stable. So I don't know whether it's really necessary I feel it would be better just to first get something which we feel comfortable with and then go to the community.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Peter here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with Fabian, and from the perspective of wearing my Ontolog hat, we welcome this working group to use Ontolog as a platform to socialize interim working draft or get feedback with some kind of synchronous sessions like this one, or even discussing certain issues on the Ontolog forum. Actually, I can see Steve Ray and, of course, Michael Gruninger are online. Either of them are much more familiar with the ISO process. Maybe would either of you like to comment on the voting or on how ISO wants to see things done?
Okay. Well, I guess I can make just a few naive comments, because I was fortunate enough to be sheltered from a lot of the political wrangling when I was working on my earlier standards projects. But I mean, overall, ISO always seeks consensus, and I believe to be finally voted on as an international standard, there cannot be any negative votes by any country. So I think but as Fabian was saying, you do want to kind of balance the sort of feedback. Having too many conflicting opinions too early can paralyze the project, but you want to definitely ensure that all of the major issues are resolved before it reaches a particular phase of the standards process. I don't know if Steve, you want to go in. Well, I don't think we should give a tutorial on all the phases of an ISO project right now, but that's kind of, I'm agreeing with Fabian about having the right balance then of comments.
No, I basically agree with you that it's the committee draft phase, which is typically when the technical content is frozen. After that, it's more or less formatting and things like that.
Maybe one process question. Do liaisons, have obligations to comment or no?
Nobody has an obligation to comment, and that anyone is able to comment.
You mean the liaisons?
Well, no person is obligated to comment on any particular standard when it's out for comment, including liaisons or anyone else.
Okay,
your
thanks.
Question?
Okay. Any further hands up at this stage?
Ali
yeah.
has a whole bunch of questions that he documented, but I guess
right.
maybe after.
They're also, maybe we should come up and pick them up to see if there's anything that hasn't been addressed, because they've been getting addressed back again as well. But Joel Bender has raised a hand. Joel, are you unmuted?
Hi, can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's better, yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I wasn't sure what the magic keyboard shortcut was. I'm a member of ASHRAE SPC 201P, which is putting together an information model for the relationship between facilities and a national smart grid that's sort of being overseen by NIST. And does this effort have any one specific target collection of concepts that it wants to be able to unify as a test case? I'm trying to understand the relationship between ontologies as generated by NOAA, which take advantage of OpenGIS concepts, and the stuff out of IEC 61850, which is a completely different collection, and the other stuff that's being generated by the semantic sensor networks out of the W3C. So, all of these things, specifically the relationship between date, time, region, value, and units of measure are constant stumbling blocks with all of the different types of ontologies that I work on. So I'd be interested in hearing what your response is to somebody that's down in the trenches. Thank you.
Who wants to say something to that?
I don't want to say anything, but I would love for Joel to type this, whatever you just said, out. I mean, at least the synopsis of that, so that it gets into the record of the meeting. Please.
Okay.
Thanks, Joel.
I'll start typing. It'll take a minute. Thanks.
Joel, while you're typing, this is Steve Ray, and the reason I think you're on this call as well as I'm on this call, I share Joel's interest in this very question. I'm also, as you know, working on the same committee on these same issues, trying to look for commonality. So, first of all, Joel, we should talk a little more because it's silly for us to work separately, and I look forward to that. And secondly, I know Michael a while ago mentioned the Idiom project out of SC4, if I heard correctly. So I would look to that project, and I'll have to start digging a little bit. In fact, the name of whoever's leading the Idiom project would be really helpful for us to basically build upon what they're doing as we tackle the same kinds of problems in smart grid.
Okay,
Steve, Michael here. So you're saying you want to know who is heading up Idiom?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll put that into the chat. I just got to look it up on my laptop. His name escapes me right now. But if I could maybe just also address Joel's comment, then I think that in a lot of ways, I mean, that kind of a problem, you know, of the smart grid or related domains where you're pulling together a lot of different ontologies that are, again, perhaps written in different languages. I think that's kind of the prime motivation for OntoIOP. And so, like I posted yesterday, I posted a few very simple examples kind of related to time, web services, and Parkhood. But if, we could get some more, industrially relevant kinds of problems, I think that would be some really good grist for the mill to kind of really demonstrate. It's kind of to kind of make more the requirements more explicit, but also to demonstrate the capabilities and of an approach like this.
Show you what we've been doing on my team with the ASHRAE standard that Joel mentioned, and Joel could chime in as well, but Michael, that'd be fantastic. I'll show you what I've been looking at.
Yeah, that would be excellent. I mean, the committee, as it's been doing its work now, is sort of doing it in UML, but it's doing it in UML only for graphics and not for any real content that I could that I can pull out. I can see an awful lot of efforts, especially within ISO 2C205, is starting to do some other information, building some other information systems with building models. And, there's the green building XML work, and there's just a lot of these things that are dealing with space, time, and measure that are absolutely ripe for a demonstration project of DOLE.
Yeah, this is John Bateman. I'll come in there as well, because this is one of the original motivations that got us going in this direction within the European Union OASIS project, where we had a whole range of applications, and each of them were developing their own things, exactly in space, time, and others as well. And the motivation there, moving us towards DOLE, was to provide a framework so that people could express relationships between different ways of specifying, say, space, time, or any of the others, but without forcing a single view on the world. And that's something from the geographical, from the GIS area, that was an experience that was very clear to us that that probably wasn't the way to go. So having concrete examples of where heterogeneity really would be a benefit, I think, will be great. So that's, I think getting your experiences there to come in and give us more examples would be fantastic. However, I think individual developments are outside of the scope of the standard as far as I can see. But of course, these would be examples of concrete work which would build upon the resources or the tools that DOL and the standard would provide. So I look forward to seeing those examples. So we still have Joel Bender's hand up. Was that your comment, or you want to come back on that? And then Fabian.
I'm sorry. I'm done. Thank you very much.
Okay. Fabian?
I just wanted to follow up on what you said. I think we should...
Fabian, you need to speak up also.
Okay.
Please.
I speak up. I just wanted to follow up on what John just said, namely that we should make sure that everybody understands what this project is about, is aligning or giving a framework where you can use and mix ontologies in different languages, or write one ontology in different languages. But so if you have different ontologies which have been developed by different communities, as you just described, then the hard work is still to be done. I mean, just because you have a framework, the framework is necessary to make the links, but the integration of the different views on the world that these different standards probably represent is still the hard work. So I don't think that Onto-IOP will solve the problems that Steve is interested in, Joel also are interested in. They will contribute, but they won't solve it.
Yeah, that's an important clarification. Yeah. Any further questions? Or points that we can pick up from the chat at this time? I'm looking through here.
Ali's still around. I mean, you have a bunch of questions that have not been covered yet.
Hi, Peter. I think they were largely answered.
You're very soft also. Could you speak up, Ali?
Is this better?
Yeah, slightly.
I think they were largely answered. I mean, it's not necessarily... I don't know if that's time to get into it. I'm just wondering to what extent it's going to cover some of the other formalisms that weren't on that graph on slide 7.
Okay. Christoph, did you want to come back on that?
Yes. My question is, thanks to all those who've been pointing out concrete examples of, mapping different ontologies in concrete domains, could you maybe post links to these efforts here, so then we'd be able to look into that and maybe identify helpful examples.
Sure.
Or these could also make their way onto the ontolog page for this conference call, right, Peter? That would be part of the documentation.
Yes, that's why I'm looking for people to type them out, because then it will be properly captured on the chat transcript on this meeting page.
Right.
Well, let me make a comment about the Onto-IOP page in the Ontolog wiki. I'd say from my personal perspective, I mean, this is a wiki, and anyone who can provide any relevant content for this page or put links from that page to other relevant pages can feel invited to do so. It's just that, probably we as the project team will act as benevolent dictators maintaining this page and restructuring it and cleaning it up. But we're basically grateful for any relevant pointers that are put there.
On that note, Peter here, it's customary for us to put, let's say, a child page on that page that says, let's say, slash suggestions or slash preparation or things like that, and then we'll have a whole blank page for people to sort of like to use as a scratch pad, and then the maintainers of the page could sort of pick up the information and move it in the right places.
Very good. So I don't see any further questions coming up. Peter, do you want to take it over from there, or is it a last round of?
Okay, I guess you or Michael could wrap us up.
Okay. Michael?
Okay, I guess we could wrap things up then. I'll just make, or any other additional issues. So I'd just like to thank Sue Ellen Wright for speaking tonight. taking some time out of her busy schedule to put together her presentation. I'd like to thank Christoph and Till and Oliver for all the work they've done so far and for presenting tonight and starting off this effort. And I'd just like to remind everyone of the ongoing series for ontologies and standards. And so our next session will be in 2 weeks, November 3rd, I believe, in which we will be hearing about some of the work that's going on related to ontology registries. Thank you very much for everyone, and see you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you. Great session.
Yeah, thank you, Peter, for initiating this, and Michael.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye-bye.